Hey, this is Josh, and you are listening to Inside Selling, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I explore how you can make selling feel better by focusing on helping others kick more ass. Today, I am joined by Kevin Romani. Am I saying that right? Am I even pronouncing it right?
That's right.
God bless me today. He headed up sales for Closed.io and was actually part of the founding team. He also has made more than 20,000 cold calls. Is that a typo on your LinkedIn?
No, it isn't.
My God, the guy's made 20,000 cold calls. He sent, I think, about a bazillion cold emails, closed millions of dollars in revenue with the C-suite and Fortune 500. So the guy's got a lot to know, a lot of knowledge about getting strangers to have conversations with you and turning those conversations into revenue. Today, he is a startup sales coach. And I had the pleasure of meeting Kevin when I was using Closed.io, when I was managing a sales team over at Jellyvision. He really helped onboard us and make the best use of that tool. Kevin, thank you so much for carving out the time to chat today.
Thank you for having me.
So Kevin, I'm super excited to talk to you. Let's go back to 2011. This company called Elastic Sales. Tell us, for the people that don't know Elastic Sales, what was the problem that Elastic Sales was hoping to solve when you guys spun the company up?
Well, we're all startup folks, and all of us, the founded that company, we'd all done startups before, and we had tons of friends who had done startups before. Most of the folks who do startups are technical founders, and it was always really surprising to find these amazing product companies that would just go out of business because the founders just didn't know how to sell. And so we thought about this and we said, you know what? No company should have to go out of business because of a lack of sales when the product is actually a good product. And we thought, okay, well, what if we just outsourced that and we offered this as a service? Now, this is no novel idea. Everybody, outsourced sales services have been around forever. But the difference was that we knew people would resonate better with us because we were going to apply technology to us, meaning we were going to approach it from a Silicon Valley style, build technology for us to be able to more efficiently outsource for other companies. And that's sort of how the idea got started.
So when you have this idea, one of the first orders of business, I guess, because you're not really building, well, let me ask you, are you building technology to get this off the ground before you actually start getting those initial customers, or did you have this technology built already?
Well, see, that's part of the topic we're going to discuss today is, you know, when do you build technology, or when do you, you know, what is the lowest hanging fruit? What do you want to test here? So the first step for us was to test and figure out, does this thing have legs? If we went and pitched to 200 companies, how many of them would actually be interested? How many of them would resonate with this? Is there even a need on this market, or is this, you know, hopelessly bad idea? So while our engineers were thinking, okay, how can we make something that'll help our sales team, Steli and I started cold calling a bunch of companies, and literally we used our cell phones and our, you know, regular landlines, and we just wrote a bunch of numbers on paper and started dialing and just started pitching to people just to see what people would say. After my first 100 calls, I got about 6 or 7 people that said, yeah, I would be interested in learning more. And eventually, after about 3 weeks, we got our first customer. And by the time we launched our first customers, the engineers rolled out a, you know, kind of very simple dialer that made life easier for us and a very simple list management tool. And that's kind of how we went.
So I love this because so many of the startups that I talk to, they make this thing and they spend a lot of time making this thing, and then they go out in search of a problem to see if somebody wants to buy their thing. So it sounds like the approach that you took was you have this hypothesis and you've got like the bare bones of this MVP, sort of not really, but in order to get started and to validate it, it's as simple as sometimes just picking up the phone and seeing if the value proposition or the problem that you're helping to solve is resonating with people. So you literally said, hey, I want to create a list of what, like certain startups in the San Francisco area? Or how did you start?
Yeah, we went to Crunchbase and we pulled all the companies that had raised at least, you know, I think at that time it raised at least like $2 million or more, some number like that. And then we found phone numbers. We just scraped and made spreadsheets and started dialing. And I remember, I was still relatively new at sales at the time, and Steli suggested to me, hey, take a piece of paper, because I'd never done that volume of cold calls in my life. And we're like, you know, he set the goal. He said, we're going to do 100 cold calls each today. And I'm like, 100? Are you crazy? He's like, nope. All you do is you make 100 boxes and check each box as you make the call. That's how you track your goal. I'm like, okay, fine, let's do it. I ended up making 84 calls that day, and he made 100, and he gave me shit for it.
Because that's what Steli does.
That's what he does. But ultimately what happened was we just wanted to test the hypothesis, just as you said. And the minimum validation we need is that, would anybody even be interested in the idea? Because if we weren't, we were going to be able to quickly change tracks, because there was no amount of resource built. They just scraped a bunch of leads. Literally day one, scraped a bunch of leads, prepared a list, created a script. Day two, started making cold calls, and started getting actual interest. And the goal was, once you get the interest, what the next validation point, can you get a qualified opportunity? Then the next validation, can you get somebody to commit? That's it.
I love the simplicity of this. I think we have a tendency to overcomplicate things. Make a list of people that you think might be interested in the problem you solve. Step two, pick up the phone and call them. Now, for all you BDRs and SDRs listening out there, this was before Seamless.ai and LeadIQ, where they're essentially giving you phone numbers really quickly. You kind of had to get a little more scrappy and put these lists together. So it's blissfully easy today to create a list of targeted prospects. But back in the day, Kevin, you actually had to, I guess, go to Crunchbase and go to sites and try to figure out where these numbers were. And even email addresses were harder to find back then.
And that's really why we were even successful, or why we even resonated with the market, because people aren't willing to just do something that simple, pick up the phone and just call. What you're really fighting there is your own fears and your own inhibitions. And, salespeople, or really good salespeople, are trained to overcome those.
Yeah, it's amazing how many things people will find to do other than picking up a phone. It's amazing. Yes. So let's talk a little bit about that. So let's talk a little bit about the script. So you didn't have like a lot of experience developing scripts. This is, now you have 20,000 cold calls under your belt. I'm sure you've learned a lot. But in those early days, what was your process? We'll get into the phraseology and the language, I guess. But what was your process for developing, the initial cold call script that you used during those initial 100, dials?
Yeah. So this is something I'm actually really proud of. Steli and I have worked on this together. The idea behind the script was answering the most obvious questions that you would have. So let's say if I'm, so Josh, if I give you a call out of the blue, right? You don't know who I am. Your cell phone rings, you pick up the phone. What's the first thing in your head? It's a number you haven't seen before.
Who the hell is this person calling me?
Right? Okay, great. So I'm going to say, hey, this is Kevin calling from Elastic Sales. Right? Did I catch you at a bad time? Right? And hopefully it's not a bad time. You'll give me a moment to chat. So once that happens, what's the next question in your head?
What do you want?
What do I want? Right? So the next thing is a basic introductory statement about who I am. And so the way we structured this pitch is, hey, this is Kevin calling from Elastic Sales. I'm calling startups in the area to see if they would be a good fit for a beta program. In a sentence, what we do is we offer a sales as a service business. Now, let me deconstruct that, because it's very well thought through, each aspect of this. So this is Kevin, who I am, calling from Elastic Sales. That's all basic stuff. And then rather than try to just jump into my pitch, I say something that garners interest. I'm calling companies, startups in the area, which means I'm hyper local in the area, and I'm talking to a very relevant company, just startups, to see if they would be a good fit for a beta program. Now, beta program is startup speak 101, right? Startups know all about beta programs, and that is designed to get them interested or curious. Beta program, what type of beta program is this, right? But then you're also equally aware that this is a cold call. And so the moment you realize it's a cold call, what do you want to do? You're thinking, how do I get off this phone call, right? That's all you're thinking about. And when will this guy shut up? So what we say is in a sentence. And what that does is it helps reduce, lower the guard of the person on the other end. Why? Because, you know, if you know I'm just going to speak for one sentence, you might not, you might give me a chance to listen rather than thinking I'm going to talk for a while and force you into a conversation. So in a sentence, what we do is we offer a sales team on demand. Does that in general sound interesting to you? Now, this part where we would go is, does that in general sound interesting to you, was only designed because it's a yes or no question. And the beauty of it is whether they answer yes, if they say yes, I go, cool, tell me about your sales process. And if they say no, I can go, interesting, tell me about your sales process. It's the same answer no matter what, and you get right into qualifying. And so that's kind of how we constructed that pitch. Yeah, it was super fun.
So one of the things that I want to delve into a little bit more, this is really interesting. I call them limiters. You know, you say startups in the area, it's a limiter, right? It's exclusive. I'm only calling right. these types of people, right? So if I'm selling a service that helps people reduce postage costs, a very generic way of saying it is, I have this service that helps you reduce postage costs. If I used a limiter, I would say I'm calling small businesses that ship more than 25 packages a month, reduce their shipping costs by 30%. Generally speaking, does that sound interesting? So that right. limiter that you're using, I think is very, very key. And I get a lot of phone calls, cold calls as well. And so many of the times there's not that limiter. And that limiter, I think, is super important to making it feel exclusive and relevant to me, because it's like, hey, that's me. I'm a small business. I ship more than X amount of packages a month. That sounds like something I might be, you know, open to learning about. Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to ask you a little bit about on that call as well that I thought was interesting is you said, if this is a fit, it's almost like psychologically, and love to get your perspective on this, you're almost trying to get them to sell you on why they should be part of this beta program. It's like, I'm sort of leaning back. I'm not sure if this is a fit for you. I'm not sure if this is relevant for you. You know, it's almost like you're kind of leaning back a little bit. Was that sort of part of the psychology as well?
We actually didn't say that. We said, yes. If there were a good fit for a beta program, I see you're talking about that piece, right?
Yeah.
So I think that piece is exactly as you said, is really, really important, because it also implies that I'm not here to pressure you into a sales. I'm just here to see if there's a good fit. So, you know, I'm here to see if there's a long-term relationship, a long-term partnership where you have to convince me just as well as I have to convince you. Whereas in reality, I'm the one convincing you. But that psychological play helps engage that conversation better.
Yeah. Now, one thing I want to push back on a little bit, the end of it was, I think you said, create a sales team on demand. Is that what you said was the last sentence there?
Yes, I believe that was something to that effect. It said, you know, what we do in a sentence is we offer a scalable sales team on demand. Something to that effect. And I don't remember the exact words.
Yeah, now let me ask you.
Does that in general sound interesting?
Let me ask you a question about that scalable sales team on demand, because to me, and this is another thing I hear all the time in a cold call, where someone's pitching essentially a feature, not really relevant to a problem that I have. So for instance, a scalable sales team to me sounds like a feature, but the problem that solves is we're helping people book more meetings with people they want to get in front of. And I wanted to just get your perspective on that, because do people know what a scalable sales team is? For instance, I got a cold call last week. Someone was saying, I have a account-based marketing end-to-end platform. And I'm like, what does that do? How does that help me do something better? What problem does that solve? And I think one of the mistakes that I often see on a cold call is people pitching benefits and features and not really having a sentence about a core problem that might be top of mind, because I think problems and pain tend to resonate more than features and benefits. But would love to hear your perspective on from a guy who's made 20,000 calls.
I 100% agree with you. I think you're right. Problems, you know, features are not, or benefits trump features all, at any given time, right? And it's all about the benefits. But the point is, I can't talk about, in, at least in the way we approached it, I can't talk about somebody's pain points or the benefits until I actually understand their business. So who we were selling to in that scenario were VPs of sales particularly. And if I talk to a VP of sales and tell them, I have an on-demand sales team or an outsourced sales team, they know what that means. And it's simple. Either they need more sales and they need more people, or they don't. And my next question really is about, tell me about your sales process. This is where I want to go ahead and uncover those pain points so I can talk about the benefits. In the initial pitch, I think we never ran into a problem where people didn't understand or didn't get it. People were usually resistant, either because they had a very good hiring process, they had a great sales team, and they were consistently scaling and they had no challenges. Or they were resistant because this is a cold call, I want to brush you off, which is what we all want to do. Those are the only two reasons why people are resistive. And or of course, if they're absolutely not a good fit, that they didn't have any salespeople, they didn't have a product to sell, and we totally misunderstood who that customer is. So they're disqualified. But other than that, we didn't really have that challenge in explaining what we do, because it's a basic thing. But then once we engage them, we want to ask these questions and understand, what is your pain point? What is your challenge? And one of those questions, actually, I'll dive right into that one, is we were trying to understand what their goal is to in terms of scaling their team. And is the limitation the number of leads they have, or is the limitation the number of people they have? And if they could snap a finger and double that, double the number of people and double the number amount of sales coming through in 1 month, would they take that? Would they consider that? And that would be how we'd engage that conversation.
Yeah, so let's actually see how that flows. So at the end of that, you know, does this sound interesting? They say, yeah, it does. Tell me more. You then go right into the, instead of going into another pitch and starting to have what I like to call diarrhea of the mouth, you start to go into some, I guess, qualification questions. So let's right. go through that. Yeah, hey, that does sound interesting. Tell me more.
Well, tell me a little bit more about your sales process, and I'll let you know if this is even a good fit.
Gotcha.
How do you do sales today?
Yeah, so we have, you know, two people currently on the team, and we are currently calling tech companies in the telecom space, and we're using a combination of the phone and email.
Okay. How do you generate your prospects or your leads?
Yeah, well, it's been a little, you know, sort of hit and miss. We're trying to find companies that we think might be a best fit using revenue and some geographic information. And then we're compiling our lists, and we're sending two emails, and then we're making a phone call.
Okay. So you're compiling your list using geographical limitations.
Yeah.
And then you're sending emails and you're doing emails and calls.
That's right.
Okay. Typically, how long does the sales cycle?
It's probably about 4 or 5 months.
4 to 5 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Why is that? What's the aspect of the process that slows things down?
You know, we're selling a enterprise software. It's a six-figure investment. It typically requires, you know, lots of different stakeholders and constituents to sort of sign off on.
Okay. Now, how long have you had these salespeople on the team, and are they consistently producing the same amount every month?
No, it's really varies. I mean, we just don't have, you know, we have two or three people, and they're each setting probably about 5 to 7 meetings per month.
Got it. And if you could double the number of meetings they were setting every month, or increase that number, is that something you're prepared to be able to handle in terms of volume?
Got it. Let's stop there, because that's an interesting one, because I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I want to know how you feel about this question, because oftentimes when you ask these questions that are leading, I call them, mm-hmm. you know, hey, if I could double your income, would you be interested in that? If I could book more meetings, sometimes that can come across as similar to the mall kiosk person that says, can I ask you a question? Can I rub some lotion on your hand? It's like, mm-hmm. I know where this is leading me, and I mm-hmm. don't want to be caught in this kind of, as Chris Voss of Never Split the Difference fame calls it, this kind of yes trap. But again, you've made the calls. Should people be concerned about asking questions that are sort of leading? Like, who would say no to that? Like, would someone say, no, I'd hate more leads. I'd hate more meetings. You know, I just wanted to get your perspective on that.
So my sales approach usually involves challenging people, you know, when they say something. So, you know, what I'm trying to get at here is not that if I doubled your sales, would you want to buy from me? That's not what I'm trying to understand here. What I'm trying to understand is, could anybody even double their sales? Meaning, I specifically asked, if you could double the number of meetings, would you actually be able to handle it or not? Because the answer to that could be, well, no, because there's a limitation on the product being able to deliver, because we have to onboard all these customers. or I'm trying to disqualify this person, not actually see if they'd be I'm trying to sell them. Does that make sense?
That's a great point. It's almost like, and I really love that approach of talking someone out of the sale. I was doing some consulting with a company earlier in the week, and that's a very similar approach that they, you know, they call someone and they essentially try to, you know, talk them out of it. You know, I'm doing this segment, but I'm not sure if you're a fit. Tell me, you know, is this, then they would ask some type of qualifying question. And what ends up happening is what I call it the flip. The prospect starts to convince you why they think they're a fit for the product or service that you're offering. And I think that's a similar approach right. that you're taking with that question as well.
And as part of that, you know, I want to understand what their goals are, you know, what their monetary sales numbers goals are. And I want to understand, you know, what the limitation on the market and the delivery of the product is, and what the limitation on the current process is. Is there a limitation of leads? Is the market really small? Or is there a limitation of the deal size just being very, very long? Where are the problems in the system? Because I'm really trying to qualify you, because I'm not even in the point of convincing you. I would convince you once I understand you. And the only way I can understand you is by digging deep. Once I do, then when I say, okay, based on everything you said, this is a perfect fit. That's like a doctor, when you go to them and they ask you detailed questions about everything that you're feeling and understand it, and then they make their diagnosis. That's what I would do. I wouldn't try to pitch them prematurely.
Right. And so then the sort of close is based on that. I think we might be able to help. Would it make sense to carve out some time to discuss this further? Or would you actually try to close right there on that call? Was it a one call close, or was there some follow up? Or
it was by no means a one call close. You know, people asked for everything from, you know, some materials or references, or, you know, a deep dive into their product. Part of it for us was the next step would be we'd want to dig into their sales process a little bit more, actually download and set up their product and play with the product, interview one or two other people on the team just to know and understand more, and then discuss the next steps.
Yeah.
But before that, I would pitch the pricing, because I would, again, want to see if I can disqualify people who can't afford the pricing. And I would try to suss out all the objections I can, because I would want to know what I'm getting into and not be surprised by it later.
And so that's a really great way to shorten the sales cycle and not have the pipeline gunked up with opportunities. And so you would say, right. you would say, hey, you know, if they said, hey, this does sound interesting, you kind of went through some of those initial qualifiers, you'd say, hey, generally speaking, this requires an investment of between A and B. Does that sound like something that's sort of in the realm of reality for you? Is that sort of how you would phrase that?
Exactly. Something it was like exactly that. How we would phrase it. And then some people will go, whoa, that's a lot of money. Why this, that? And I want to hear this, because I actually want to know if these things would happen later unexpectedly down the line. I wouldn't want that to happen. I want to know now what your objections are, because I want full clarity and predictability on the deal cycles.
Now, to play devil's advocate again on this one, because this is another one that's debated quite a bit, maybe the answer varies based on what you're selling. But there's also a school of thought, like, I don't want to really present the investment required until I'm able to show value, until I'm able to show that price relative to what they can gain, because everything's too expensive if I don't know what it is that I'm going to be able to get for that money. $100 is too much if I don't know if I'm going to be able to make $400. So it sounds like you're giving people a high level understanding of how you might be able to help, but you haven't really quantified the upside before presenting the price. What was the thinking behind that?
So it would be like this, you know, the introduction to the call, you know, permission to continue, giving the elevator pitch, allowing them, allowing us to qualify them. And once we've qualified them, then we're diagnosing the problem. We're saying, okay, based on everything else, this is really good fit. Here's how we can help specifically, given what you've said about your business. Here's some examples of how we've helped other companies in this space already. And that, you know, this is just to give you confidence that we can actually deliver. Now that I've explained the value of what we would deliver to you, here's the price.
I get it.
And get all those objections out of that.
I get it. And then,
like,
you know,
timing, just not, decision-making process,
totally.
Of pricing, all that.
And not to get too deep into this, but I mean, one of the common objections, and we're not going to go through all these, but one of the common ones is, hey, you know, can you send me some information? I would imagine that's one you know, and how would you address that? I have a perspective on this as well. It's a pretty common one, but You know, back in the day, Kevin, how did you handle that one, which was probably pretty common?
Yeah, this is a very common one. So I'd get this, usually get this, send me some more information, usually at the as a brush off at the beginning of the conversation. You know, I don't have time right now, but send me an email. So I would usually go, sure, I'll send you an email. What's your email address? And so they gave me their email address, but now their guard is going down because they think I'm going to get off the phone, but actually I'm not. So, and then the very next thing go, cool, I'll send you an email, but just so I send you something relevant. How do you guys do sales today? Is it outbound or inbound? And so now I would not ask more general questions. I would ask more specific questions. And my goal would be to ask the types of questions to lead them to a conclusion that maybe I have something that they want. And then the moment they ask a question in this process, I've got them. I've got a conversation, right? The brush off is over.
Right.
And some people will push back some more and just say, just send me all the information that you have. If I said, just so I send you something relevant, you know, how do you do sales? And they might go, just send me everything about the company you have. I might say something like, look, I'm going to send you information, but I don't want you to spend 45 minutes reading all this info. Let's just take 2 minutes. I'll have a couple of questions, and then I can send you information that's relevant. And if they're still insisting, then I might go, look, let's be honest here. The fact is you're telling me to send you an email because you don't really plan to read it because you're too busy to do so. You don't really find what I'm saying interesting. Am I right? And then they might go, yes, I'm not interested. Fair enough. Well, the reason you're not interested is because I haven't told you anything to be interested about. So let's take 2 minutes and let me tell you why. Otherwise, if this is not a good time, let's chat tomorrow at 2 p.m. And so you don't want to win everything, but you'll win some of them in that manner.
I love it. That is very, very almost identical to the approach that that I would take as well. And the also important thing to have, and it sounds like you have this mindset as well, Kevin, get into mindset a little bit, is you have 100 people on that list. And you can certainly have the mindset of, oh my God, you know, 75% of the people aren't interested. But you could also have the mindset of 25%, you know, might be interested. And so who else can I call? And you could also have the mindset of, if they're not interested, maybe I could be more interesting to kind of work on your pitch. And so it sounds like you and Stelly back in the day, you kind of had that mindset of, hey, I got this checklist. This is before, you're not using CRMs or, you know, leaderboards or gecko boards, like any of this rah-rah stuff we have today. It's just like literally a checklist. And you could do this too. I mean, if you have a CRM and it's complicated and you don't know how to track things, just get out a piece of paper, man, and print out your leads and dial down them. I also see a lot of today, I see a lot of task switching going on with a lot of companies that I work with, meaning they'll make a call, then they'll send an email, then they'll
fuck
around in the CRM, then they'll come back and they'll go to LinkedIn and then come back. So let's talk a little bit about that. What's your perspective on, you know, the importance of not task switching?
We were big volume people at Close.io and Elastic Sales because, frankly, at the end of the day, you know, the motto was that no matter how bad you're at sales, if you want to double your sales, you double your volume, which means volume is everything. And so that means you show up on time, you're ready to go, you do your dials, you focus on getting as many dials out as you can, get that done, then you focus on your emails at the end of the day, and try to hit your numbers consistently every single day and every single week. But at the end of the day, you know, sales is one of those things where there's two key skill sets or two things that make a salesperson successful. There's actual skill, the ability to sell, the ability to connect with other humans and all the nuances of the sell, and the ability to be consistent, meaning you wake up, you feel like shit, you had a fight with your wife, you have to show up to work, and you have to dial. Like, you have to do this consistently, day in and day out, no matter how you feel. After lunch, you're tired, doesn't matter. You've got to do this consistently. Those people usually outperform, like, even average skill set people. So I think, in my view, that's more, I weight that more than even sales skill, because sales skill will come from that eventually. But having both is very, very critical.
And then also making sure that you're calling the right people. Oftentimes I see this so much as well, like, hey, we're making all these dials, but we're calling the wrong people.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see people that are calling in and they'll hit the gatekeeper and they won't try. They'll be like, okay, thanks, bye, and then they'll move on. Because at that point, they're just trying to get through their dials because they feel shitty. And really what's happening is that salespeople go through this streakiness, right? Where they feel really, really great and they're killing it, and then they feel really, really bad and they're bombing everything. And the problem with that is that they think it's some like law of nature that this happens, but the reality is that it's their internal state. How they feel is actually influencing how confident they are and how those conversations go, because people react to that confidence. So when people are feeling really shitty, and these calls tend to streak bad. When they're feeling super confident, they closed a couple of deals this morning, that day is going well. So one thing that we focused on a lot is how to break that, like break the bad streaks, and reset your state to a point where you feel good again about doing the work. And then you're not trying to just get off the phone. You're trying to challenge people. You're trying to get something out of it.
Right. That was one of the things that's always struck me whenever I've watched Stelly, is he always has this such a positive, you know, enthusiastic mindset. And I know it's, you know, when I watch him on video and I've seen him speak and when I read his stuff, but I'm sure there's moments where he's not like that, because, you know, everyone's human. What do you do in those situations where you're just having a bad day? I mean, do you walk away? Do you have any like tips or methods that you've used to kind of get yourself, you know, reset?
So I give a talk on this exact topic about once a quarter to the Alchemist Group and a few other places. So this is something I think a lot about and I care a lot about. It's something that I've studied a few different people and places around, and it's all about internal state management. So if you're having a bad day, it means you're usually having a bad state of mind. And it's personality and the way you sound, the energy and the confidence, but also your body language, you're touching your face, you're hunched over, like you'll see salespeople like this, right? You know that there's a problem. So being self-aware that this is happening is key. And if you don't have that self-awareness, at least a good manager will have that awareness and can see that. So what I would like to do with people like that is like break them out and take them out of that process, and then have them go through a couple of exercises. There's a mental exercise and there's a physical exercise. The mental exercise, I just have them think about positive things, like something that they're truly excited about, somebody that they're really grateful for and why they're grateful for that person, something in their life that they're really thankful for, and have them write this down, close their eyes, be in the moment, enjoy and experience this. I'm kind of going through this fast, but for brevity's sake, but that's sort of one exercise. And have them take 5 minutes or 6 minutes on that exercise. And then the other exercise is something physical. You know, it could be like go for a fast-paced walk, put on a song that you love and just go pump it. Or like do some push-ups. We had actually a trampoline in the office, so we'd go on a minute or two on the trampoline. 1 or 2 minutes on a trampoline will really get you pumped up, trust me. And that's the thing about the human body. Like, you know, your body manifests your emotions, but if you hack your body, your emotions will reflect the body's state. So if you, for example, go for a run, you can't physically feel shitty or be angry or be mad or be in a bad state. Like, you're naturally feeling better. So, you know, jump on a trampoline, do some push-ups, go for a run, go for a walk, any kind of physical exercise, jumping jacks, anything at all will get that blood pumping and get you feeling good.
I love that.
And that, the two exercises, that's how I break people out of that.
That is absolutely fantastic and so easy to sort of implement. One of the things that I used to do when I would get in a funk, and some of the people on my team, is we would, and this is not as short as what you just did, which I like even better than what I used to do, which is, let's talk to some customers, you know, and have a conversation with them and, you know, hey, you know, what's better now since you've been using our product? You know, what have you guys been doing? What's been going on? And oftentimes we always hear about the problems as salespeople, but oftentimes we talk to happy customers. They'll motivate us. And as an extra bonus, you could record that on Zoom and you could use that even in your cold outreach, in a cold email. You could take that little clip of maybe a little moment of that and you could use it as a quote. But sometimes talking to happy customers, again, is another way to sort of break you out of your mindset. But I really love what you said, that it starts with awareness. Like if you feel, if you can become aware that you're in this funk, step away and go do some jumping jacks or bounce on a trampoline or start to list some things that you're happy about.
Exactly. So you brought up a really good example. You go and talk to customers and see why they're happy, and you better hope that they're actually happy, because if they're not, then it's going to make it worse. But what's happening there is that in that moment when you go and talk to customers, you're relying on somebody else to change your state, right? In any human interaction, when two people interact, there's an exchange of states. when you know, you have that person that, you know, that friend that the moment they walk in the room, and maybe you're that friend, I would very much believe that you're the one, but that person that walks in the room and suddenly they're the life of the party and everybody's excited. And you know that one friend that walks in the room or you have in your life, and every time they're around, you just feel bummed out. You just like just feel shitty. And this happens in human interactions because some people have very powerful states, whether they're intensely positive or intensely negative, and they can highly influence you and everybody around them. So one of the core beliefs I have about sales is that sales is all about state exchange, and if you can positively influence someone's state, then you're going to do really, really well. But when we're having the bad streak, what's really happening is that people are negatively influencing our state. That customer that yelled at you, then got mad, somebody who chewed you out, somebody who hung up on you, they're influencing your state. You could not maintain your own state. So what you do is you go and talk to a customer who's happy and their positive state influences you up, or you do these exercises that I talked about, which increases your level and brings your state back up.
I absolutely love that, because I think if you're, to your point, Kevin, if you're not in the right mindset, the skills and the activity probably don't matter. I mean, that's sort of the foundation of it, right? I mean, if you don't have that mindset, you're not going to be able to perform as well as you could perform if you're in that positive state. Kevin, what are you doing nowadays?
So today I am a sales coach. Particularly, I'm a coach to early stage startup founders and early and mid stage startup founders. I work with them to help them become sales leaders internally themselves. A lot of times, long before the startups will hire their first sales leaders, the founders have to do sales. They have to build a good pitch, get the types of customers that help unlock a massive market, be able to handle tough objections, close those deals, build a repeatable, scalable machine, hire some couple of junior sales reps, and build that out. And that's what I help founders do, and I coach them and mentor them and train them into high-performing founders.
And if there are people that want to learn more, they want to talk to you, they want your perspective, how do they reach you?
Well, they can reach me on my website, which is kevinramani.com, KevinRamani.com.
Kevin, you've said it all. So much pure gold. Thank you so much for your perspective. I know people are going to get a ton of value out of this episode, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.